Welcome to Krakoa, Corona Version Edition. So we take deep dives into Dawn of X, but currently we are going back into Dawn of X history, looking at past stories that the X-Men have been involved in that either tied in with Dawn of X stories or have influenced something in Dawn of X. And our read this week was X-Men Supernovas.
My name is Fox.
I'm Alas.
I'm Rodders.
And I'm Juan.
Okay, so part of this week was my bad because the arc with the we were reading this arc mainly for the first appearance of the Children of the Vault. Well, I gave us a way too long reading list, and we read two arcs, one where the Children of the Vault appear, and then the one after it, which had nothing to do with the Children of the Vault. But there is something in it, in the second arc, that in the second part of the arc that we read, that I think has some type of influence on at least Hoxpox. And I'll get to that in a little bit. But, okay, let's start off with, overall, what did you guys think of this arc?
I have, like, a genuine dislike for it.
Why?
Okay. So, like, I was reading through it, and, like, the thing with this arc is that it tries to do something, and it doesn't live up to it. Like, it feels like there's a lot of, like, setup for, like, something really good, but it feels like every time it tries to set something up, it fails. And there's, like, a lot of scientific jargon in, like, this arc that you can Google and get correct. And, like, listen, like, it's not even, like, this is, like, sci-fi bullshit or whatever. This is, like, actual stuff that you do in a lab, and you could just Google it and get it correct. And this arc was in 2008, so you could have easily consulted someone. And it's, like, widely, like it's, like, information you could get from anyone. Because, like, the thing that really got me was, like, they were talking about sterilizing something, and they were like, oh, 200 degrees for 2 hours. And it was like, you only need to, any lab you go to is going to sterilize their stuff at 157 degrees for an hour if it's wet heat. And then if it's dry heat, it's only 160 degrees, you know?
And no, like, we don't know because we're not all smart like you. Almost.
I was like, come on, Alma, swing it in with these scientific facts.
Like, it was just, like, little things like that that kept pulling me out of the story, because these are just, like, small, like, if you're going to write about something, you should know the very baseline of it, you know? Like, I'm not saying, because I'll, like, take a lot of, like, scientific stuff that's in comics, and you'll be like, yeah, sure, that's how it's going to work in the universe, but you have to ground it in reality to give your story a little bit of background. I know that's, right, like, such a specific thing to have, like, with the story, but, like, that kept taking me out of it, because these are just things that you could just, like, Google in real life, you know?
That's fair, I guess.
You see, I definitely share Amos's feelings about, like, everything, except for the science stuff, because I had no idea. I was like, sure, whatever, I believe it. I was like, okay, so there was this awesome setup, and then it kind of goes nowhere, kind of goes like wah, wah. And then they have like that last image where everyone's there, and I'm like, oh man, this is gonna be so cool, and they never pick it up again
until now.
Yeah. And also, okay, the switching between the art really got to me. When it wasn't Botulo's art, I got really upset.
Yeah, I can understand that. The I'm under the strict feelings that Ramos's art does not really work on anything but Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I get he's very famous and very popular and people like him, but his art is just, I'm fine with cartoony. It's just the way people bend and move, and just like it looks very weird.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. Yeah, like when you have a certain vibe to it, and the art changes so much and kind of changes the feel of the book, I'm just kind of like, ugh. So, yeah, but I love the fact that it was like this is one of the few stories that, where it's like in Mexico and it has like Mexican characters. And I was like, awesome. But then they don't really give them anything really. Like there's no real story behind them really.
I think they did that to set them up for later, which I mean, no writer wanted to pick it up until now. So I'm glad Hickman is though. Cause there's 3,000 beings that are just in a vault that no one has touched. They haven't come out for years. So someone needed to pick it up at some point.
I one thing I really liked about this is that like it was very much, I like it went from Cyclops telling Xavier to shut up and let him do his job, and then it went into Rogue telling Cyclops to shut up and let her do her job, and everybody was just being all kinds of sassy in this book. I love how in near the end of the, was that, no, it was the end of this, the one right after the Children's Vault arc, where it's just like, I'm not, okay, I'll wait till we get to that, but like, Sabretooth was a really good wild card in this, and I love how just like they just kept Sabretooth around, like they didn't, they're just like, yeah, okay, instead of just leaving him locked up somewhere, they're like, yeah, we'll bring this psychopathic, you know, manipulator with empathy for anybody, we're gonna bring him along, and he's totally not gonna double cross us at any moment in time.
I know, they literally brought two of the notorious double crossers with them on a mission, and I was like, okay, I get Rogue's mentality of like, I want to keep an eye on Mystique, you know, keep your enemies close. But okay, so you threw nanites in and Sabretooth to keep him calm. You just found out that the person can hack computers and people, so you think it's smart to fill them up with robots? Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't too much. Yeah, it wasn't too much critical thinking in this part of the X-Men, but that happens to them a lot. Honestly,
everybody was just really angry. Everybody was really angry. And like one thing I noticed, Iceman's costume in this was really dumb. Like his glasses he had and jacket. When I posted a picture of it on Twitter, everybody was like, wait, is that Wonder Man? I'm like, okay, fair.
Iceman.
Yeah, it could look like it could be a... They were like, oh, is that Wonder Man? I'm like, no, it's Iceman, but I get how you could understand his costume would kind of look like... It does kind of look like a Wonder Man redesign. But, like, everybody was super aggro in this. Like, Bobby...
Feelings.
Bobby threatened to, like, cut Sabretooth's throat, which is not something I've ever seen him like threaten to do in anything ever. Like he's never that like angry or scary or, well, I mean, I've seen him in, you know, like one of the more recent issues of Marauders where he gives all those soldiers frostbite, but I've never seen him like towards just like a single person be like, I'm gonna kill you. And yeah, but
ooh, this is something that like was a nitpick for me, and I understand this is such a nitpick because like there's no one else who like read the New Defenders but me, but New Defenders establishes that as long as there is any moisture in the air, you can't kill Bobby,
right?
And like, and that's been established for like 30 years now, and so like I guess they forgot about it after that.
And well, no, he had barriers on him, like a mental barrier for himself that he put up there for some reason.
Yeah. It's just like, I was reading it and I was like, I guess, I mean, he just controls the moisture in the air. He's not just, it just felt like reading the story, it was like very tedious. Like it was a short story. It just felt like Mike Carey had like a very basic understanding of the characters.
Right.
And it just shows that like, I don't know, it just shows that, like, it was more of, like, a basic understanding of the characters rather than, like, I don't know, like, something that was, like, fully thought through and prepared.
Like, yeah. He just had the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah. Like, he looked at the wiki. Oh, and I'm just going to correct myself. It's 137 degrees. I misread. Not 132.
Damn it, Amos, you see how easy it is to make the mistake?
It's easy.
I know,
137, 200.
132 out of 137. I just misread my notes.
We all make mistakes.
I was actually really excited. I thought this was the first appearance of Bobby not dying from, like, being technically killed. I didn't know they already established that in the New Defenders. I've never read that story, so I didn't know. That's why when we read this, I was like, oh, this is when they discovered that. That's cool. At least this story has some significance.
But then they cheapen it by doing that trick twice.
Well, yeah, they had to make you see it again to know that it was like foreshadowing that this is going to, you know.
To the trick, though?
Yeah, it was like foreshadowing the story where they're going to be like, hey, the bad guys thought they killed him. But haha, no, you didn't. We got you back. It's like any movie when they like talk about something in the beginning and it happens at the end.
I didn't think I needed it twice.
I like when, because Rogue isn't like this anymore, or at least she wasn't in past stories recently, like in the last few years. But I like how she just took charge and just told people what she's going to do and then formed a team on her own, even though they told her that she could. But she's like, no, these are my people. You said I could have what I want. Like, I like how in charge she was, because when she was in, like, last year, year before last, she was in the Uncanny Avengers. When they tried to make her leader, she was very unsure of herself. And I know a lot of things happened since then, so that's probably why she's unsure of herself. But I just love seeing Rogue, because she has so much power, just be so,
like, headstrong.
Yeah, just be so in a leadership role. Also, I tried to figure out why she has fire powers, and in this, because it doesn't explain why, because it already established, and apparently she absorbed Sunspot's powers, which that was interesting. So I was like, why does she have fire powers?
I really like this book. I still really like it because, you know, it's Mike Carey, and I'm a big Mike Carey fan. I'm going to read more X-Men Legacy after this because I have to. But
is he the writer of X-Men Legacy?
Well, he basically it goes to, I believe, to something like 208, and from 208 it turns from X-Men to X-Men Legacy. Okay. Get the retitle, because I think Uncanny X-Men started or around that time. Again, I don't know. It's all very confusing.
It is very confusing.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Mike Carey stays on that, and it's primarily stories about Xavier, Magneto, Rogue, Gambit, and just like massive amounts of D-list characters, like B and C-list X-Men characters.
And that's why I wanted to start reading X-Men Legacy, but I didn't know, like, where it started, what its jumping off point was from. So it's nice to know that it was from spanning from this run.
Yeah, because it basically he started with, you know, X-Men 188, which were restarted, then kept going and went to like 208, and then it, you know, retitled to X-Men Legacy and kept going until right before Marvel Now, which then it relaunched as the Legion series, and then that went for, you know, what, almost 20 issues, and then ended, and we haven't had an X-Men Legacy since then. But
so his X-Men Legacy story, do the Children of the Vault ever come back, or are they referenced again?
No, they don't come back. Not off the top of my head, but because one thing about Mike Carey is he got sucked into a lot of crossovers.
Mm-hmm.
His X-Men Legacy had a part in, I believe, Messiah Complex. He did that one crossover where it was a crossover with Wolverine and X-Men Legacy, where it was them dealing with Daken being taken in by the Hellfire Club. And then he got sucked into, I believe, Utopia X. He got sucked into, there was Age of X, that whole thing. He was sucked into Avengers vs. X-Men, Second Coming. So his story was very much cut, you know, chopped up between a bunch of events, but when he didn't, when he was able to just go by himself, he, I mean, even in the tie-ins, he was really good. But when he was just able to go by himself, like, even then, the stories are just fantastic, in my opinion, fantastic. Because I like D-list characters. I like when the X-Men can just not be the people you see constantly.
Man, that's true. I get that. I'm actually, I think reading the story made me really excited because we know in Dawn of X that a storyline is going to happen with Children of Atom at some point.
At some point. Because
Children of the Vault.
Children of the Vault, not Children of Atom. Children of the Vault at some
point. I made that mistake too. I'm not the only one.
We'll eventually get the Children of the Atom.
Right. And it's interesting because X-23 and the Cinch and who else went in there?
Darwin.
They've been in there technically that we know of 3 months, 3.5 months. And in the Children of the Vault's time and the Machine's time, it's like 5,000 years, they said. I might be a little off, but it was a couple thousand years. So given that, give or take how long the Children of the Atom put themselves in there, they've been in there. It's been at least like 2 or 3 years in comics time since this event probably happened, right? I mean, because comics time goes by very slow. So that means they've been in there for, man, if 3 months is like, let's say, not even 5,000, let's just say 3,000 years. Then they've been in there for, man, hundreds of thousands of years. So they probably might even look completely different than when we saw them in this little storyline. Like, I was, I really like the design of, like, the fishbowl character. I don't know if they gave her a name. I can't remember, a little electric fishbowl red suit woman. But they might all look completely different, even more advanced than the X-Men are right now. So it might be like an all-out death battle. Fortunately, the X-Men can die and come back, so that's nothing really to worry about. But with this being such a big thing for Hickman and them trying to take care of them and sending people in there, what if this, if not Inferno, what if this is leading into the event that's going to be in December? Well, if it's still going to be in December. Because, you know, we have that big event they will not mention the name of or anything about right now that's going to happen with the X-Men and maybe beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just wish we would get a time frame when new comics are going to come out. Like, I just want time. If you give me a time, if you give me a date, then at least I have something to look forward to.
Right? Yeah. I just feel like Marvel doesn't know what they're doing yet. Are they still trying to weigh out their options? You know?
I don't know.
Personally, it's starting to get a little annoying just because, like, Marvel hasn't said anything officially and everything's being done by, like, a third party. Like, it has to be a comic news site that's breaking this news. And I'm like, well, why can't Marvel tell us?
Yeah.
It's always like insider information. Either way.
Yeah, I'm just, I just want a date. I just want a date. If they need to push everything back out a month, I'm fine with that. You guys want to push everything back a month? That's fine. I'm okay because we got all of March's comics, I'm pretty sure. And it's only the April comics. So, like, if we just pushed everything back exactly a month, that's fine. I can live with that. But the Marvel writers want to say something.
Right.
Like, yeah, we don't know. But you guys have to know something. Everybody talks to each other. This industry is very small. I know that.
I feel like the Marvel could just release, like, maybe after April's done, if things are still going some way in the direction of going back to normal, they could release the comics on digital, maybe do, like, 1/4 or half of each comic go towards, like, helping comic book stores that, like, apply, maybe, to, like, Marvel.com. They make, like, a little section for comic book stores to apply for, like, I don't know, don't, like, help, like grants or something.
An assistance payment.
Yeah, like an assistance payment to help them. That proceeds can go to that. Like something where you can still have a product come out where it's not delaying everything for the whole, you know, comic book system that they have. Mm-hmm. And then they're still being looked at as, you know, helping their own community, you know. And that would still make Marvel lose money. So I don't know if they're about that. But, I mean, I feel like at this point you have to, if you want to keep in good graces with your, you know, with everything, yeah, you have to make some sacrifices.
I was thinking they really need to look at what books released that do good well digitally more than anything else. And, like, I remember, for example, Ms. Marvel did better digitally than it did in print.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I'm guessing, like, other books are like that. Like, I'm guessing Runaways.
I think
Runaways would do better digital than print.
I guess this is something I read, that, like, Iceman 2017 did better in trades and digital than physical sales, because a lot of these people are new to comics. I still don't understand how comics work. I've been reading them for, like, a year and a half. I have a really hard time with, like, the subscription thing and stuff like that, so I just technically usually just buy trades unless I really, really, really want an issue. So I think there's, like, a neglect for, like, online sales. But I don't think that's going to work in the climate like this at the current moment. I don't think they're rethinking their entire business model. And I don't think, if you guys read this yesterday, but Bob Iger, who used to be the CEO of Disney, came back up because he didn't want any financial losses for Disney. And Disney is, like, Marvel's parent company. So yeah. I'm pretty sure he's going to be influencing some of the decisions to push people back to work. And I say this as, like, he's been talking about to reopening Disney World. Don't and I read that yesterday, and I was like, cool. I don't think this is how any of this works, but I'm not knowledgeable enough to argue with him or to, like, argue with anyone about when we should open anything, because, like, that's not my area of expertise. But it seems wrong that he wants to, like, open the parks by, like, June. And it's like, I don't think that's plausible in this climate.
Or smart.
Yeah. You could do it. Like, there's all the things you could do, but it wouldn't be ideal.
Yeah.
Or smart.
Yeah. You can do things. Doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, let's get back on to... Does anybody have any last, like, things they want to talk about Children of the Atom? Or... Oh. Keeps happening.
Children of the Vault.
I actually do. There's, like, this... there's this really heavy-handed scene, and I don't know if you guys noticed it or if it was just me, but there is this really heavy-handed scene between Sam Gerthy and Serafina, and it reads exactly like a rape metaphor. And
yeah,
and I was sitting there, and I was like, okay. Oh my god, we're doing this, aren't we?
Yeah,
because it was very heavy-handed and it was clunkily, like it was so forced and heavy-handed, and I just was sitting there, I'm like, what's the point of this? Because it's not addressed in any way. There's, like they've done this before in comics where someone will take advantage of another person. They've done this in, like, one of the Gambit series, where Gambit is there's, like, a metaphor that he got sexually assaulted in one of the annuals, and it's done in that same way where it's really heavy-handed, and you're like what am I supposed to take away from this, because it's a traumatic experience, but it seems to be very much so glossed over, other than the fact that he asks her if it's real or not,
right?
And then she's like, no. So it's very, like, what was the takeaway? And you could have written it in another way that didn't come off as, like, she violated him.
Well, I think the takeaway, I feel like they completed the little inch of an arc that was. It's just a show that they really don't know how humanity is. She was just trying to experience, like, she told him, she was like, I was just trying to experience what would it be like to have that kind of life. Real quick, because she probably thought he was, like, hinting at maybe he was attractive or something, or just wanted to experience that with another person. So she used that opportunity just to fuck with them, because, I mean, just to see what it'd be like. And I think this was to show that the Children of Vault basically have no empathy, no morals. Like, they're just built on destruction. They said it themselves. They were supposed to wake up to conquer the Earth. So they woke up too early. They're pissed off. And they also already don't have a good moral compass. So this is trying to destroy and do whatever they want. So I think that little storyline with the techno telepath girl.
Serafina.
Yeah, Serafina was to give a little edge or a little push to that. That, man, they really are screwed up in the head and they really do not care. Like, they'll do whatever they want just because they feel like it.
One thing that I did notice in X-Men Legacy, just because I'm like, oh, because my brain is so wired into finding Dawn of X references, was their use of a singularity to basically destroy that town.
You remember
the Children of the Vault? Got it that time. used a singularity or black hole to destroy that destroy part of that town to blame it on the X-Men.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ha, more connections.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's about all I have to say about that arc. I mean, I liked it. I get where everybody is coming from about it. I'm just sad we never really got to see Children of the Vault more. And I really loved their floating ship thing, though. That thing was cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I basically loved everything about this little arc thing. I think it was too short. And I think that it was just kind of randomly placed, especially with the arc that's right after this. I was like, why even do this if you're not going to do something else after?
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed reading it.
It could have been longer, but I mean, Maasai Complex literally comes like less than a year after this arc. So I'm guessing he might have needed to shorten it so he could get all the characters where they needed to be for that arc. For, you know, the events.
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay with this story. Like, it's not the best thing ever, but I'm okay with it because it introduces the Children of the Vault. It introduces such a unique concept with them of that they're human mutates. They are the next step in human evolution. I like that. And the whole idea about them, where they were supposed to come and wake up after the human species have died out. So that was an interesting concept. And the designs for those characters were really rad. I liked the way they looked, especially Serafina's design.
Everybody was super cool looking in this. Like, everybody except Bobby had a good costume.
Right.
I didn't really care for the arc after this, though.
Yeah, I can kind of understand that. Yeah, it was really weird. I don't know what was going on with it. It was very confusing and, like, almost felt really pointless. However, one connection I did notice, it was almost that thing that was sent to, that was coming to Earth to find, what was it, that virus that was in Lady Mastermind's head.
Yeah.
It very much reminded me of, remember back in Hoxpox, the world mines and everything, where all the different minds are sewn together, and like all they're digitally uploaded, and it has all the knowledge of certain people. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, because that little virus thing that came to Earth had all the minds from the people that it just killed in itself too. And Rogue had to absorb all of them to bring it down.
That's exactly what it reminded me of. So, like, is it a very light connection to, you know, to the Hoxpox? Yes. But it's still a very similar thing. Hold on to that, because I like feeling smart.
No, it was a good connection.
Okay, so this is, like, something I remember. I was talking about it with a friend, and Hank says this thing that's, like, he tells Bobby that, hey, Bobby, you lost, like, half of your density. I'm going to bathe you in liquid oxygen, I think it is.
I
Googled, like, the melting not melting point. I guess like when
the freezing?
Oxygen is liquid. It's not freezing. Yeah. It's when it's liquid. I don't know what that's called. So it's about 420 negative 432 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's like negative 200 degrees Celsius, somewhere around there. And I just sat there like, you could argue that Bobby likes the cold, but I feel like liquid oxygen is like a, not liquid oxygen, liquid hydrogen, I think it is. That's such a weird thing to bathe him in because he lost his density. And like, I just sat there like, you could have just cut out this line entirely and it would have given me like, a better feel of like how Bobby's powers work. Because now I'm just thinking like he controls moisture in the air. Wouldn't it make sense to just bathe him in like a shower? Yeah. Right. He doesn't need hydrogen or oxygen. He needs the moisture.
Yeah, just
I don't know. I
put him in a bath. He needs it probably.
Like, it made me think that like even in Beast and all the comic books that he's been in and in the X-Men, the animated series, he's always kind of, they always have him just spat out some random scientific knowledge. And I feel like that was it for him in this comic book. They just were like, hey, they Googled or whatever they could at that point, that real quick. And they're like, nah, this sounds cool. We'll make Beast, this sounds real scientific. We'll just have Beast say this to Bobby to help him. And when I read it, I was like, oh, that's cool. And I kind of just moved on. Because it's like, oh, that's something that Beast would probably say. I don't know if it makes that much sense, but it sounds right. But I'm not obviously majoring in biology or anything like Mrs. or chemistry, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, like, for me, it's not like, it's just like a weird thing to put in. Because there's a lot of, like, I read all the comics and, like, I do give my imagination to them a lot of the time. But this comic had, like, such... It was so specific sometimes that it was like, if you're going to get the specific, you know, like.
Do a quick Google search.
Yeah, if you're going to be specific about something, do a quick Google search about it or something, you know. That's the thing with this arc. However, I will say I do like the because I had to look up the screenshot for the liquid hydrogen. I do have to say I like the screenshot where Hank is like, if you make any hostile moves. I may forget I took the Hippocratic Oath. And it's like, you forget you take the Hippocratic Oath like every other day. Nothing can be done follows OSHA procedures or any house safety protocol.
First of all, you're hairy as hell and you only cover your mouth.
Yeah.
He tries to pretend. I think it makes him feel better. But speaking of Iceman and something that I personally hated during this arc, was how they made him and Mystique like a thing. I
hate that story.
Like I know we didn't know he was gay yet. That's not the problem for me. It's just like it was so out of the blue for me. And I don't really know why why they made that. It doesn't make sense to me.
I hate that relationship in the same way I really dislike Rogue Magneto.
Oh, yeah.
They are so much older than... Like, yes, I get it. Mystique is blue. She doesn't show her age. She is so much old. She's, like, from Victorian London. Like, it's not...
Yes, hundreds of years old.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's...
Yeah, like, I got the trade of X-Men Manifest Destiny, and there's a Bobby story in there, and the whole story is about him... being in this relationship with this woman that ends up turning out to be Mystique. And it's this whole story of like, you know, I can't believe you do this to me. Are you just trying to ruin my life? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, oh, why is this a thing? Like, I just don't get it. Like, she's a shapeshifter. Cool. Like, is that your way of saying that you're like into like your sexuality is fluid? Cool. That's cool, Bobby. But also, like...
Pick a different shapeshifter.
Yeah, pick a different shitty person. Like, why pick Mystique, who's also the mom of, like, one of your also X-Men buddies and, like, the stepmom of another member? Like, come on, dude.
It gets worse when you realize there's a bit where he tried to date Rogue, like, in the 1990s. God. he and Rogue attempt to date, but then it doesn't work out because he brings her home to his dad, and his dad, like, goes off. There's actually, like, that's a really good scene in, like, X-Men 1990. I want to say it's like, one of the 30s issue, like, one of the 30-something issues. He brings Rogue home to his parents, and, like, his parents are dissatisfied. And Bobby goes on this rant, like, you're going to hate everyone I come home. They're either too alien or too Asian, and you didn't like her or him. Or it's, like, it's a really good thing, and I think that leads into Bobby maybe, if his parents don't like someone and he doesn't like them, like, maybe there's something wrong. It's just, like, a really good scene anyway. Right. That's off topic. But, like, he also dated Rogue, so it's him dating Mystique is also kind of weird. That's like if Bobby went and dated Magneto now after dating Lorna.
Oh, God. I hope not.
X-Men are so incestuous. It's ridiculous.
Like, almost don't give them ideas.
Oh, God. That is nightmare fuel right there. One question I want to go back and find out is, like, why was Cyclops so anti-Cable in this issue?
Because he's smart.
You don't like Cable?
I hate Cable. I think he's the biggest, like, plot device that should have disappeared a long time ago.
I'm not a big fan of Cable, but ironically enough, I did like him in this arc. I did not really like this arc, but they made Cable enjoyable for me. He actually did things. He actually was, like, helpful.
One thing I was very confused about, but, like, Cyclops is like, oh, why is he here? He's not an X-Men. I'm like, dude, that is your son.
Exactly.
That is your son. Why are you being so aggro?
Cyclops, the best dad in the X-Men.
Well, I mean, you know, definitely in Dawn of X, I think he says this in Dawn of X, he admits that he hasn't been a great father. And this is a receipt to show for it.
Which is funny because, like, this is a complete opposite of the last story arc we read. The last story arc, he's like, I need my son. Where's my son? And this one, he's like, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know you like that.
Okay, so I think right before this was the second volume of Cable released. So maybe he did something in Cable Volume 2 that pissed Cyclops off.
Cable does tend to do that.
Yeah. And also, like, Cable's old enough that where he can be, like, Cable's, like, older than Cyclops is, technically, because of... And so he, Cyclops telling him to do anything is kind of laughable because, like, hey... I'm older than you are now. And, like, even in Second Coming, Cyclops, like, tries to give Cable hookers, and Cable's like, how about I not do that and say I did? Because he does not care what Cyclops tells him to do. But, yeah.
Did anyone read the annual that goes with this?
No, I didn't.
Okay. I mean, what I happened did.
I read it too, because I was like, eh, why not? It's only one issue. So I actually really enjoyed it, and this is one thing I want to talk about real quick, because it connects to the part in Hellions, actually, that when Mystique is talking to Rogue, they're talking in, like, the shield floating ship thingy, and, like, Rogue was like, get away from me, you know, once this is done, you know, you can leave, I don't care about you, you know. Rogue's attitude towards her is always like that. But then she says this thing, she's like, I came back to the school for only one reason. I know I've hurt you, and I hurt you badly. And she's like, I don't know, I don't want to hear that. I can't do the country accent like that.
That was great.
I know, I'm already country, so that kind of helps. And then she's like, you have to hear it. She's like, control manipulation, they're a part of my nature, a big part of it. If I've tried to steer your life in a certain direction, it's because I thought I knew what it would take to make you happy. And then she also says, like, when I love someone, I lean on them hard, fence them in, make decisions for them. So I feel like I posted this on Twitter, I feel like Hickman really did his research, maybe not specifically this, but hopefully this, When he's made that passage in Hellions talking about when he made Beast talk about how mutants' attitudes are affected because of their powers. Like, they might not even be able to control it because they might not want to do this wrong thing. They might try to change themselves, but their powers manipulate their personality so much that they just can't help it. They have to, you know, manipulate somebody. They have to be wild. They have to be bloodless, you know, based on their mutant powers.
So I did not read the annual, and I feel like I should have, and now I feel bad about it. Thank God.
It's not that big of a deal in the annual. I just like that little bit. It's just basically, what's the twin's name?
Jean and
Aurora.
Yeah, it's and just how they become, you know, not crazy anymore.
I did love them in this story. I did love how they showed Sean Paul as like an actual badass. Like, I was like, damn, that's the first time they let him be like cool in a long time.
Yeah,
he was really, and I really like how Anol was the only person who was able to like sort of break
his concentration.
Yeah, like he's like, hey man, I'm so, yeah, it's so great to see you. Because Anol probably sees North Star as a sort of mentor figure.
Right.
And he's like, you were all undercover the entire time. It's fine. It's great. Right. Because I'm guessing this has to do with after Wolverine public or enemy of the state, where Wolverine is taken over by the Hand, and they also use North Star. So I know that's where that came out of. But it was so great. Like, that was Anol being the one person who could break his concentration and because North Star was trying so hard not to kill Anol, he didn't care about anybody else. But he just didn't want to kill this one specific person. I kind of love that detail.
I was like, oh, yay, that's his little baby gay mentor.
Right.
Exactly.
His mentee.
Yeah. No.
So I know we asked to have questions. Do we want to answer them on this podcast? Okay.
Yes. Okay. So I actually have them right in front of me.
I have the first one. I think it's the first one.
Yeah, we have all three.
Yeah, I said, would you want to see Thanos try to attack Krakoa? And I've been reading and I've been seeing hints that Thanos is probably going to be brought back. I think Donny Cates is actually probably going to bring him back. And I forget what he's writing. Oh, he's doing Thor. So I think he's probably going to bring him back in Thor or something, or his future projects. But if Thanos does come back, I feel like it'd be kind of interesting to see him attack Krakoa. I mean, I think he would get beat because there's so many powers.
And they're so unified, too.
Yeah. So I don't think it would be tough because Thanos is, especially depending on his power level, because it changes frequently. But I think it'd be really tough for them. But I think they could do it. I think it'd be really cool to see, though.
I would enjoy that, but also I don't think Hickman would do that, because Hickman doesn't really like writing the same characters twice. Because if you notice, like, he left Sunspot and... Which are the two mutants that Hickman had wrote the most, even more than Wolverine, and that's Sunspot and Bobby. So you can very much, and where did he leave them? He left them in space.
Yeah.
So I don't think, after Thanos being such a big part of both the Avengers and then going to Secret Wars, I don't see him using the character again. In my opinion, could he? Maybe. Sure. Do I think he's going to? Probably not.
Unless.
Yes. Sorry. I spaced out for a minute there. My bag came on my lap, so sorry about that. What were we talking about? I apologize.
Thanos. Would you want to see Thanos invade Krakoa?
No.
No.
I just, Thanos, unless it's like just him and Apocalypse or him and Magneto, it has to be like a 1v1 thing for me. Like, it's, he's interesting as a character, but like if he goes on this like whole, like, why specifically Krakoa? There's no,
right,
at least in my head, there's no like reason for him to attack. But if it's like some bullshit Apocalypse did, and it's obviously gonna be some bullshit Apocalypse did, and they get in a 1v1 fight, I'd like to see that more. And I know Vita Ayala, they wrote the Thanos solo.
Mm-hmm.
So
Vita wrote Thanos solo?
Yeah. Vita did the Thanos story.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
I thought Vita was doing Nebula right now.
Oh, was it Teeny Howard?
It's Teeny Howard did Howard. Thanos. Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry. Teeny Howard did the Thanos story, and I liked the Thanos story.
It was good.
It was really good. So, and like, I'm on the fence about how she writes Apocalypse, because I like a very specific Apocalypse, but that's like because I acquired taste because I've read so many Apocalypse stories. And I think like a 1v1 battle is what you want with Thanos versus him versus like an entire team, because it gets tedious and you get this ensemble cast and you lose characters, and there's, you have to make an event versus if you just want to do it for an issue or like a 5-issue arc versus in like a whole thing.
Right. Yeah, it does. And I mean, he's never shown any interest in the mutants.
Right.
Like, ever. So
my whole take on the situation is, if Thanos comes to Krakoa, it's only to have a daddy off with Blue Daddy. So it could be Purple Daddy versus Blue Daddy on the Ultimate Daddy Challenge. And we all know Blue Daddy will win.
Oh, do we?
Apocalypse. He's got his harem of boys.
That's true. But I don't know. I mean, I think especially now, I think especially since Apocalypse has gotten like a magical power-up, he would probably win.
Yeah. But no, I officially mean like a daddy off. Like, there's, who's the sexiest daddy?
Oh, I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking power.
Get out. What kind of kid are you? Get
your so I was out of here. Like, I was thinking a comic book.
Power. Give me all your Lady Gaga albums.
So, but okay. The second question is, does Molly know Krakoan? And I don't think she hasn't passed through the gate yet. I mean, they ask if we think she has passed through the gate. I don't think she has.
Well, I think it'd be, would she pass through the gate?
I think she would. She's a mutant.
I know, that's a question. What do you guys think?
I mean, nah, she doesn't know Krakoan.
I don't think she knows Krakoan yet. I think she was supposed to know Krakoan when she walks through, because that's like how everyone does it anyway.
Yeah,
right.
And that's why like Kitty doesn't know Krakoan.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, like, I think she knows. She'll know Krakoan. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Yeah.
I think they have, like, English labels on their stuff. Anyway, sorry.
I mean, we're gonna see her do something involved in the X-Men whenever comics come back, at least. And so we'll see. I'm interested to see what happens with that, but I know she's not gonna stay on Krakoa permanently.
No, she won't.
She's such a huge advocate of like family. Being part of the family of Runaways, and they've been through so much to stay together. I don't see her wanting to leave. Where, like, it's different with Franklin, because Franklin's an ex-teen boy, wants to do his own thing, and he's leaned towards his mutant side. Molly, not so much. She hardly ever really says to anybody that she's a mutant actively, like, all the, like, not as much as Franklin. And I know at some point in time she becomes Bruiser, but, you know, will she cross the gate? Probably just to visit, but I don't think she stays.
The Bruiser is also alternate timeline, so I don't know if that will ever really happen.
Yeah, it's all Hickman timeline now.
Yeah.
It's all Hickman all the time.
Right.
So the last question is, how do you predict Moira will end up revealing her plans?
That's a good one.
Because there are so many possible ways. I mean, it's hard.
My preferred one, and this is just because I love drama, and I feel like we haven't had, like, soap opera levels of drama, is Moira having her hand twisted by someone else. to reveal her plans. Because Xavier and Magneto are very protective, and we're assumed to know that Apocalypse maybe knows, maybe doesn't. Because you have to remember that Apocalypse's old scribe, Asmodeus, he used to be able to tell the future, because he had knowledge of all possible futures, because he got, like, his mutant powers mixed with Kang the Conqueror, and that's, like, a whole other thing. But basically, his old scribe could tell the future, so we're assumed to know that maybe he knows that Moira is also alive. But the thing is, it's like, they would all protect her, because Apocalypse, on one hand, he wants what's best for mutants. Like, he can still be evil and, like, want Krakoa to succeed. Like, you can have that, like, balance, because he's being, like, he's preserving himself first. However, if maybe Mystique comes and, like, I want it to be, someone said this, and I really love this, but, like, the core of Hox Pox is a conflict between two women. It's a conflict between Mystique, and not Mystique, it's a conflict between Destiny and Moira. And it should, like, if we're going to have that conflict with Moira, it should be Destiny. It should always be these two, because they are, like, our dramatic protagonists in the story.
And they have a huge history together, too.
Yes. So, I personally love for Destiny to twist her hand, or maybe Mystique twisting her hand so that she can bring Destiny back. That's my personal preference of how it should go on, because I think taking away from the fact that Hoxbox is about two women is would be frustrating for me.
For me personally, I like the way I almost did it. That's like basically pretty much my first wish for it. My other one would be, since Hickman is all about family and he loves writing the family drama, Legion comes back. Legion comes back and he disrupts everything, because I feel like he's the one person that could actually be a huge threat, not only for Moira, but all of Krakoa, because he's one of those mutants, kind of like Empath and all of them, that have that wild side that they had it beforehand, and with their mutant genetics, it just amplifies their crazy. And he's unstable, so I would love to see him come into the story and him be the one that shakes everything up.
Well, isn't Legion Moira's kid? Isn't that Xavier Moira's child?
Yes.
Okay, so that'd be interesting to play, like, mommy. No?
Legion is not Moira's kid. That's Legion is David Haller. Kevin
McCann. Oh, yeah.
Proteus
is their kid.
Proteus is Moira and Xavier's kid.
Can't keep track of all these babies.
Okay. Well, still, it's not as dramatic since it's not his mom.
Wait, Proteus is actually Moira and Kevin McTaggart's kid, I think.
Isn't really?
Not
Kevin, Joseph. Joseph, like, Moira and Xavier never had a kid together. Isn't that correct? I feel like that's correct.
Joseph. Wait, hold on. Let's look at this.
Moira, I don't even know anymore.
Proteus, let's look this up, because I'm confused.
Actually, I'm like 100% sure his kid is Kevin. I'm 100% sure.
It is Joseph.
See, I know this, because, like, I remember going off on a rant. See, the only kid that you would consider, like, maybe Moira and Xavier's is Raheen, and that's because Moira adopted her and then Xavier taught her for a while. But Proteus is definitely just Moira's kid with Joseph, because I remember reading that. Because I remember reading, like,
that's a rape baby.
Yeah.
Proteus, well, that's probably why he's like that.
Yeah. Proteus is Moira's kid. Legion is Xavier's kid. Mm-hmm. And I would actually kind of love to see that battle between the two. Have they ever battled?
Proteus versus Legion?
Yeah.
No.
I
know of.
I don't think they've ever met. There's a lot of X-Men history, so they could have. But I don't think they have. But if we don't get the... I think we're going to get Mystique obviously doing something. I mean, we had a whole, like, a whole issue about it. Hickman's not going to write a whole issue about it and not do anything with it. He did that for a reason. So I think Almas is right about her making Moira bring Destiny back, or reveal that she's still there and reveal her secrets in some form of way. But I also feel like Legion is going to come back at some point, because he came back with all the X-Men, right? After the Age of X-Men?
No, he did not.
He didn't? Did he stay there?
Hold on. It's really confusing ending.
Okay. I know this ending because I went off on it. Because I was like, this is important because they have the life seed.
Yeah.
And as you know, I'm the only person who's like, yes, Apocalypse lore. So in the end, what happens is like they, like Legion and like Nate, their plan is like, everyone knows their plan now. So Magneto's like, I'll take the blame and return the word back to normal, because if you get like the life seed, you get one wish. So I'm pretty sure Legion is back in the main universe. It's just like, we're not sure where he is, because we're not sure where Nate Grey is either. And like, there's this implication that like Magneto might have done something to Nate and Legion, because we haven't seen either of them since then.
Yeah.
To like put them away, like push them away with the life seed to create his perfect world. So like, there's a lot going on. And like, I'm kind of upset that it's not touched on, because I think that's like, that was like, that would have been like the perfect setup for Hoxpox, is like Magneto did all of this.
Right. That he triggered all the story happening.
Because he was like, I'm going to take all the blame and be the villain again.
Right.
And then I'm going to return the world to how it should be.
I thought Nate Grey stayed in his alternate reality, I mean, his planet thing, though, in his little version of his world. I thought he stayed there with another version of Magneto at the end.
That ending was just them, like, returning the world back to normal.
Oh, okay.
No, the way I look at this panel, it does very much look like that he stayed, because they're in this little house, and it's all like, it's all surrounded by black, like, and there's nothing around it. It looks like, yeah, it looks like Magneto goes off into the main world. But what's his name?
Nate Grey.
Nate Grey and the Nate Grey Legion combo create their version of Magneto. And it says, it looks like Magneto's going to the, Magneto goes into the real world, and then Nate Legion looks at the, Micron crystal, is that what it's called?
Emcron.
Yeah, Emcron, thank you. And he says, shall we? And then his version of Magneto comes in, and it says, yes, I think it's time we start anew, properly this time. No secret, please. No false prophet, no X-Men, no tyranny. And let us begin with a simple question. What would you sacrifice for your dreams?
And yes, I think that he's starting there.
That feels like a very pre-Dawn of X.
Yeah.
Question. And then it ends with a quote. This curious world we inhabit is more wonderful than convenient. More beautiful than it is before. It is more to be admired and enjoyed than used. Henry David Thoreau, Familiar Letters. So that's very curious.
I personally felt like after Age of X-Men, they shouldn't have had Uncanny X-Men continue. It should have been the Age of X-Men leading into Dawn of X, or Pox and Hox, because of exactly that.
Yeah. It did. It didn't continue. Uncanny X-Men didn't continue after that.
Yeah. It was that issue, and then the issue where, like,
yeah,
where like Jean and like Cyclops are making out, and like Emma and Wolverine in the scene.
Yeah,
God, that part, like, was trash.
Yeah, but
it was a mess. I'm not a huge fan of Age of X-Men, but I think we should eventually do a read through of it, just until maybe comics come back, because not all of it, maybe just like a couple of series, because there's a lot to talk about in terms of how it translates as a precursor to Dawn of X versus, like, you know, just a standalone event.
Yeah. I did like Age of X-Men a lot. And I guess that maybe I Fox brought up that good point that Nate and Legion were actually the same person towards the end. And I forgot about that. So I guess that's where Legion is. If they did stay in that, he said it wasn't an alternate reality, but whatever kind of different phase. Yeah, another dimension. The pocket dimension. If they stayed there, then I guess that's where Legion is. Yeah. If he didn't come back, then that's where he is.
But then you have to think about, like, where's the other Omegas, like Mr. M?
Oh, I don't know. Another storyline that's gonna come up.
Like that, there's a handful of mutants that can mess up Moira's whole thing, and I feel Mr. M would be another one.
I think I want Legion and Mystique team up only because Legion's in love with his own precog. So,
oh yeah, Blindfold.
Yeah.
So that is a team up I would like to see, because like, imagine Mystique's, you know, keeps trying to do things but can never succeed, and then eventually she just gets really tired of it, and she tries to find the one person who could possibly understand her problems right now.
Right.
Yeah.
And that would be Legion.
Yeah.
Ooh, see, this is what I would do. Because, you know, Legion has so many powers. We don't even know what powers he has. So what if one of his powers is, like, crossing dimensions? We know he can create another reality. I'm sure crossing dimensions isn't anything that he couldn't do either. So if he can get on his own without Nate, right? Isn't it Nate? Without him and using a life seed to escape, he just does it on his own. Either accidentally or because he did it on his own. It lands on Krakoa. Didn't mean to. He kind of got lost. The power is probably super hard to control. And it lands on the beach, like, all days and everything. And the first person he sees is, like, Mystique, you know? Because maybe we get another clip of Destiny telling her, like, a little riddle or something to meet him at some point, too. And then she does something we never seen before.
The prodigal son is coming.
Yeah. And, you know, she told her about Krakoa before, but she didn't really know about it. But she told her to watch out for this, you know? Don't trust people, or whatever the quote was. I can't remember at this point in time. And then that's how it all gets started. I feel like that'd be a very, like, Hickman-esque thing to do.
Yeah, I want, because imagine the one weapon that could possibly take down Krakoa that Mystique could wield, and that is the very son of the man who brought
Krakoa
into being.
And there's so many parallels there, like you guys said. Also, being in love with a precog, both of them. Mm-hmm. And then his girlfriend, or his love, Blindfold, doesn't get a resurrection. She can't get resurrected.
No, she can't.
And I'm hoping that Leah's story touches on that somehow.
That it's not right that they can't get it resurrected too.
Yeah.
Okay, I do have a question, because I forgot we had a Curious Cat account, and there is a question in there, and I think it's a fun speculation question that we can wrap up with. But in the end of, if they end up making that rumored X Corps book, who would you think who would you want the team to be?
I'm sorry, what was that?
If they end up making that rumored X Corps book, who would you want the team to be?
Ooh. Yeah, I'll go first.
That's hard, because there's literally so many people, and boom. I remember Sunspot was my initial thought for it, but he's not anywhere. X Corp. But that's the thing, we'd have to know what X Corp is, because the thing about Dawn of X is they've taken so many names and they flipped them on their heads.
Yeah.
Like, well, what from what they used to be, because X Corp used to be a corporation, right?
Yeah.
So, but like, I mean, they took Fallen Angels, turned it into a strike team. They took Hellions and turned them into, like, Suicide Squad. And,
well, what if X Corp is, like, the liaison team for Krakoa? Like, because, I mean, Magneto and Xavier and Apocalypse have been doing that, kind of, you know, meeting all the diplomats and all that of different countries and nations. But what if X-Corp becomes that?
That would be actually really interesting. Get like the more dignitary X people.
Yeah.
I think I'd really like if X-Corp was a book about money laundering. It's like, they have so many shadow puppet, like, and they just like trying to hide the fact that they're money laundering all over the world because it's like illegal, but they're making so much money because they're trying to like pursue to help people and stuff like that. I think that would be like a interesting book because it would be money laundering, but for a good cause,
right?
You know, because like it's kind of like how Marauders is like, we're doing this, we're smuggling in like the drugs to other countries,
right?
However, this is like more of like a flip on its head that's like, yeah, we got the drugs in there. Now, how are we going to sell them to people without the government being notified? And you got money laundering.
So who would be on your money laundering team?
I definitely want, like, X-Kid. So definitely, like, Sanos, Anol, Roxy. And because they, for a while, ran Worthington Industries.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'd love to have, like, Nature Girl on the team. Because I think Nature Girl would be, like, the type of person who would just, like, because she can talk to the plants, and she can talk to animals, and she could use that to her advantage if they're trying to, like, bring in the drugs into the country, stuff like that. And I think just having, like, a team of, like, ex-kids would be inherently, like, really funny, because these are people who have done nothing for their entire lives. I'd also like Julian on the team, but that's because Julian is also, he was also raised to be a businessman. Like, he never went to college. I don't think he has a high school education. But he's definitely, like, when you read, like, his New Mutants Hellions, his dad trained him to be... His dad wanted him to run the family business. So he naturally has, like, charm and, like, stuff like that. I think that would be fun. Maybe add in Cecily to the mix to have, like, more muscle, because you can't just have, like, Santos on the team.
We would need one adult to be like a sort of.
They're all adults. It's fine. They're all adults.
Yeah, technically, like, they should all be adults at this point. Yeah.
Okay, Samantha. Well, okay, we need one at least, like more older.
A senior, an established X-Men.
Monet.
Monet?
That actually segues nicely into the thing I was thinking about. Because I'm thinking, like, I like your money laundering idea, but if it didn't go that way, I would go back to my idea, which was the,
not yours, but mine.
I didn't say it like that. I did not say it like that. I said, if we don't do that, because I actually do really like that idea, but I'm trying to say what was in my head. but if we did, like, the diplomat and, like, corporation, like, the liaison, I mean, like, a liaison that is, like, for the other parts of the world, I think almost you would actually. I think you'll like this because I would actually want Warren to be like the head of that because you know he has money and he'd be able to do all of that. It's like Emma has money, so she's like head of the Marauders, kind of, and all that. Mm-hmm. And actually, my other person I would want on there that's like kind of like the muscle, but also like helping Warren do it was M. And then I would want actually thought of Nature Girl too, but I also want Trinary. That way it kind of touches on every part, like nature, technology, you know, finances, and like diplomatic ability, and then just kind of like interpersonal, which is kind of like him.
I hate y'all. Y'all took all my characters.
I mean, I would have to be more than just four, but I can't think of anyone else right now.
You see, like for my personal team, which I think would work for both of your guys' team, it would be led by Warren, because he now, since he can shift between his personalities, you know, he's able to do both sides of, you know, the pendulum, either, you know, be the muscle or he can be the dignitary.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah. And I would actually throw in Dazzler into that team because she has been a liaison before for the Mutants and S.H.I.E.L.D. So I would like to see her be part of that group. I would love Trinary in there because I feel like either concept of the X-Corp team, she works. And then for the younger ones, I would definitely like Nature Girl because I feel like she has such a calmness about her and she's such a level-headed character. I feel like she would work. And then, if I had somebody else, I would probably do like Velocidad or someone like that, you know. They always need like a little speedster, hard headed, wild card.
Yeah. I like that.
I was thinking, I don't know how if X Corp would work for a name for this book, but could it be Nightcrawler's religion book? Like X Corps, maybe?
So
like,
basically.
Like Corpse, C-O-R-P-S-E?
Means... So you're telling me like Nightcrawler starts Scientology?
That's right. Basically what it would be.
Nightcrawler starts an MLM scheme.
There you go.
And it gets that's where all far.
The money goes. You see? That's where they can launder the money into, to their church.
Oh, God.
All connects. There you go.
Maybe don't call it X-Corp. Let's not call it X-Corp.
X-Corps, guys.
No,
like dead bodies.
Oh, God. This
one. It's C-O-R-P-X.
Oh, okay, God. Okay. So I know Bobby's on New Mutants, but if he can, like, if this can be, like, his solo book, like his Pseudo solo book, you know, like, this is a team book, technically, but it's him, like, doing business in the Shi'ar Empire. That's where he is, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. My God, that'd be cool.
That would be a different take on it, though. Like, not even on Earth.
Yeah, like, why not? We don't know how intergalactic businesses work. I think that would be fun.
Well, he is a landlord right now, so X Corp would make sense.
Down with landlords.
It's just him owning a bunch of buildings.
Well, I think at some point he would bug other mutants to come, like...
Be landlords?
Yeah, well, no, well, like expand the business.
We need more mutant landlords.
Either because of, like, friendship... Are just because he tricks them, just like he kind of like tricked the Kree and like letting like stalling them for the X-Men to get there. I think he would probably trick somebody in Krakoa to come visit him. He'd be like, "Hey, well, since you're here, I have this idea."
I was
pretty much his personality.
Imagine like a trio, like have like the corporation trio be Sunspot, Monet, and Angel.
Like that, all the rich kids.
All the like, they're just doing wacky mutant business in space.
Yeah. See, like we haven't seen that yet, and I think it would be like inherently funny, especially just because like Warren and Roberto is like they're both naturally chaotic characters, like not even in terms of their just in terms of personality, because they're both like off unhinged if you let them be unhinged.
Yeah. And Monet would be absolutely disgusted with both of them.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I feel like, you know how they always have, like, oh, this X book is about this, this X book's about that, like, what kind of genre it's trying to be in it? I would find that that'd be, like, a nice, cool, like, a pulp-style genre of a book with them.
This is, like, okay, if the X Corps books happen, I want it to be where every issue is written by someone else.
Ooh, every issue, cool.
Every issue is written by someone else, and you have to like catch up with the plot, because I think that would be fun in a way. Just to like be that one book where everyone can just like throw so much creative energy towards it. That's what I would want it to be, because like X Corps, if it's like a business based book, it doesn't need to have like a consistent plot. It can be like a sitcom.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Yeah. Turn X Corp not as serious.
I feel like we have a lot of, like, serious X-books. Like, we have Cable, we have X-Force, we have Wolverine. I wouldn't call Marauder serious, but a lot of people consider it serious. We have...
X-Force,
I forgot about the X-books we have. We have Hellion, so it's technically supposed to be serious.
Yeah.
It's, like, rated R for mature content.
Yeah, and then Excalibur is like magical seriousness.
Yeah,
that's the LARPing for the nerds.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have like X-Men, which is like just like it's still very serious in tone. Like you have fun issues, but it's still very serious in tone. And it's the same with it's probably going to be the same with X-Factor, where it's like the overall tone is serious, but it's a funny book.
Yeah, I think the overall tone is definitely going to be like, Leo Williams definitely knows how to make some funny anecdotes, But I feel like that book, with all the characters that are in it, like Rachel and Northstar and everything, is definitely going to be more serious.
It's got a lot of mental health in that book.
It does. And Leah Williams talks about mental health a lot. So I think that's a lot that's going to be touched on. What I was thinking about, actually, since we brought up Em a lot, whatever book that I know she's, they've like put her in random little clips throughout the X books. I know they're going to use her at some point. If whenever they do use her, I hope they bring up the fact that she was like a villain because of her brother for a period of time. Like, she was eating mutants, basically. So I hope they hope she has to face that or like talks about it. Because then I feel like it's like a waste if she doesn't.
And it also would be cool to have a team where like there's two people that have had like alternate body forms, like having, you know, Archangel and Penance in a team together would be rad.
Oh, like every like have a team of X-Men where they all have had like personality trauma,
dual personality.
Yeah, there's quite a few of them, actually.
Yeah. That would actually be hilarious. Like Sunspot, like whenever like people, they just don't let Sunspot get his way. He just sicks Penance and Archangel on people.
Yeah,
he's like, hey, go murder.
They're the muscle.
Yeah.
Go murder some people right now.
You're also rich, but you're also willing to murder people. Go, do it.
So it's basically, essentially, it's like the mob. It's X-Mob.
Oh, mutant mafia in X-Corp being mutant mafia would be so cool.
There you go. Hey, money laundering, so it works.
Yeah, I mean, that would just go with the money laundering thing. That would be cool.
That's it. It writes itself. Guys, we just wrote the book. We just need to find a writer. Now, who would write this book? Oh, wait, no. You said rotating author.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I think me and Almas can do that.
Okay. So, I think that's pretty much it for us. Next week, we're going to read one of the most polarizing events.
Avengers. Okay, I wouldn't call it polarizing. I'd say polarizing sees 50-50. I'd say 75% don't like, 25 do.
It's not Inhumans versus X-Men, okay?
Yeah, no. Because Inhumans versus X-Men, that was generally like disliked by both sides, but like people on both sides like Avengers versus X-Men. Because it came up with, it again does that thing where it comes up with cool concepts and fails.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like what X-Men versus Inhumans, I don't think it came with any good concepts.
No.
Yeah.
But hey, we get some really cool fight scenes that we can talk about next week that we're going to read about this coming up week in Avengers versus X-Men. So that's going to be fun to talk about.
Okay. So.
All right. No, that's it. So thank you for visiting our habitat. I am Juan. You can find me at ChangoATX on social media.
My name is Fox. You can find me at AgentFitz777 on Twitter.
I'm Almas. You can find me at Unworthingtons on Twitter. Or if you're into it, I'm a Diamond Gore on Our Tribe of Our Own.
And I am Rodders. I am at Rod Bunny Slay on Twitter and Instagram.
And thank you guys for stopping by in our habitat. Have a good day.
Bye. Bye.